It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Chris Breen of Macworld Magazine joins us. Mr. Cook goes to Washington. We'll talk about his congressional testimony, new Macs made in the USA, and perhaps a Retina MacBook. We'll get you the latest. And we'll also talk about other great stuff that I can't remember. So I'm just going to eat this sushi and let you watch Mac Break Weekly next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 351, recorded May 21st, 2013. There'll always be donuts. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your direction, such as affordable business and personal documents you can trust. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to Audible.com/MacBreak. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MacBreak5. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Apple and Macintosh needs, starting if you're watching live a little late because of the Xbox One announcement, Microsoft's announcement of their new Xbox console sometime later this year, and we covered that live, but it's time to Mac Break, starting with Andy Yannacco and his friend Dennis Hopper from beautiful Massachusetts. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Leo. I thought that we're going to be heading far upriver today because we're going to be talking. I saw the show notes, and we're going to be talking about taxes and tax law and international movement, and so I think that you got to see the circles, man. Horror. It's all about rings.
The horror. That's a great picture. That's from Apocalypse Now. That's great.
Gosh, that's from Apocalypse Now. Also, he's wearing some really cool gear, which he probably was too stoned to understand how cool the cameras he was wearing were. So,
also here, great to have you, Alex Lindsay, back from his travels.
Good to be
here.
To
see you. Yes. Welcome. And from Pixel Core. Also here, Renee Ritchie, back to Montreal for him.
25% tax that I return to the U.S., Leo. I'm trying to get Congress to change that for me.
There's a limited amount number of times you come here before we start thinking of you as one of ours.
I'll be there for WWDC, Leo. I'm coming back.
Oh, yay!
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a couple of weeks off. We'll probably, by the way, we will do live coverage of the WWDC keynote.
Awesome.
And maybe you will join us afterwards. And finally, Chris Breen, the Mac Daddy, Mac911 from Macworld.com. Body of Breen on Twitter. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Leo.
And his album of the week today features.
You want to take a guess about what that might
be? Boy, I don't recognize it at all.
No, it's a little obscure. It is An Evening with Wildman Fisher.
Which was, oh, my God.
Frank Zappa project from 1968. Basically, Frank found this guy who's a lunatic and made a double album with him. And that's it.
Yeah, I always thought Captain Beefheart was obscure, but Wildman Fisher, now you're really going all the way.
Well, Wildman Fisher is something. That is indeed a picture of him holding a knife to a picture of his mother.
Yeah.
I think that says enough.
Zappa was the original media prankster, I think. Great stuff. I'm a longtime Zappa fan. So welcome. Good to have you all. I guess the big story, in fact, it was going on this morning. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, was testifying in front of a Senate committee about Apple's tax policies. Here's Carl Levin, the chairman of the committee, welcoming Tim Cook.
This is 5 hours long.
Yeah, we won't air the whole thing.
I won't. Yeah. AOI has never had any
of these. Well, one of the things he said is, I have an iPhone in my pocket, but he just wanted to say Apple is an American success story. I have an iPhone in my pocket, but Apple also has, quote, a highly developed tax avoidance program, and they have sought the holy grail of tax avoidance by setting up offshore corporate networks. We've talked about it before. What was it, the Irish runaround and the French sandwich, or I can't remember what it was called. But this has been well known for a long time. Apple avoided virtually all tax on $36 billion in worldwide sales. No U.S. tax in 2012 on those U.S. sales. They avoided $9 billion tax.
Federal tax.
Federal tax.
They're paying state tax.
Isn't that funny? Not.
I mean, you know, I'm saying you're paying when you every time you buy something from an Apple store.
We pay the state tax.
Yeah, I mean, but
that doesn't pay Apple. Doesn't pay the state tax.
It's getting organized.
All right, Apple avoided $9 billion in U.S. taxes, avoiding $25 million a day or $1 million an hour, according to Carl Levin, in taxes. But Congress has been very anxious to point out that, and you pointed this out, Chad. A lot of members of Congress have been tweeting, "We love Apple." Nothing wrong with you, Apple, and nobody is. I don't think anybody is averring that this is an illegal tax avoidance strategy.
It's not even close. I mean, the thing is that it's not even close to being illegal because it's not doing any of the a lot of the stuff that people are talking about.
It's illegal, but it's kind of unethical.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, here's the thing is that what they're not doing is what a lot of companies do, which is to license software to an offshore account.
What Google does.
And then send it back to them, you know, so the thing is they are doing things. They've been doing what they're doing since the 80s. They are doing, you know, they are building these things out. Obviously, they're taking advantage of it. I mean, a lot of the,
John McCain saying Apple's corporate tax strategy reflects a flawed tax system.
Yes.
He says Apple's three primary Irish entities hold 60% of the company's profits, but claim to be tax residents nowhere in the world, not even in Ireland.
That's because it doesn't fulfill Ireland's requirements for a corporation.
Yeah. So they're avoiding taxes entirely on this.
A lot of this is what I would call the kitty cat rule.
What's that?
The kitty cat rule is that your cat doesn't eat you because you're a lot bigger than it is. You know, it may seem nice.
They seem sweet.
They sit on your lap and they purr and everything else. The moment you're 1/10 your size that you currently are, that they would eat you. And the issue is that we all complain about Apple doing whatever it can to reduce its taxes while we go to H&R Block and use TurboTax to make sure that we don't pay any more taxes than we have to as an individual.
That's different. I mean, we're looking at the first of all, I agree that this is a tempest in a teapot. I don't think that it's you also have to point out that Apple's official statement on this is that we would like to see a revision. We would pay more taxes and pay more taxes locally here to the United States of America if you revise your tax code so there wasn't such an incredible advantage for us to do this way. But I think it's the way that I usually look at this is that it's sort of like those extreme couponing shows. Where I don't think anybody begrudges the fact that, oh, look, the store did not understand that when they did a 2-for-1 on this steak, it would be possible for you to apply this with your discount card with this AAA discount to get 10 steaks for free. You sort of admire that. But then when you see someone who is able to wheel out 8 carts worth of like $800 worth of food for free and cleaning out like all of the steaks for the entire store so that no one else could get them at the 25% discount, that's when you start thinking that perhaps they should close those loopholes so that it is not possible for someone to operate that way. So yes, it doesn't look good, but I don't think we should say that. I don't think anybody should really say that Apple is really trying to pull a fast one anywhere. Yeah, so
let's just see if
they stick by that statement. Oh, no. We would love you to change your tax laws. Yeah. And as soon as you do, we would love to pay more taxes. It's sort of like saying, I would absolutely love to pay $5 an hour to park here.
No, they would use it for free. They would love to bring their money back to the United States. That is clear. I mean, they're taking out a loan. They're spending a lot of money and they're taking out a loan because they don't want to bring it back.
They're taking a loan for tax avoidance.
There's a lot of corporations that if it was 15% corporate taxes or whatever, would bring all their money back really quickly. You know, and they would definitely do it while it was available.
I got to point out, though, that unlike the coupon scam, when a company doesn't pay its fair share of taxes, those of us who do pay our fair share of taxes pay more.
But what I would say is that all of us, I mean, I don't know about all of us, but I know for me, you know, I am not going to pay the government a penny more than
I pay as little as I can.
And as my company grows, I become much more sensitive and much better.
Right.
And, you know, I have more people that I pay that make sure that I don't have to pay more taxes than I have to. And if I could figure out how to build my company in Ireland, I would do it too.
Apple has a fiduciary responsibility to its stakeholders to make as much money as possible. That's their job.
I mean, it's just like the tax laws in the United States are so idiotic that I don't feel bad for them at all.
Rand Paul says, I'm offended that Congress is bullying one of America's great success stories. He's offended by the tone and tenor of the subcommittee hearing. To bully one of America's greatest success stories is not doing anything illegal. If anyone should be on trial here, says Rand Paul, it's Congress for creating a bizarre and Byzantine tax code that simply doesn't compete with the rest of the world. We should be shining a mirror on ourselves. Actually, you can't disagree with that either.
I completely agree with that.
Apple's doing something completely legal. Carl Levin said, the committee's not going to apologize to Apple. We didn't drag them here. They've come willingly. And I think that that's actually, in a way, that is an important point to make. Tim Cook went to Congress and said, let me explain this to you.
I would have loved to see Steve Jobs do this, though.
I can't imagine Steve doing that.
Awesome TV, though.
I don't think he'd do
that. You want taxes? I'll give you taxes.
Yeah.
If he had actually done it, it would have been fiery. Would have been awesome.
So that the testimony, as you said, was 5 hours, but it just ended about a half an hour ago. And you're more than welcome to watch the whole thing. I think a lot of times when you see something in an exercise like this, it's in lieu of actually doing something about it. It's like, you see,
well, it is regrettable. There's no legislative body that can do anything to close these loopholes in the tax code. And so, you know, it's important that Tim come up there and say, gee, you know, if there was only someone around here who could do something about this, it might happen. But clearly there isn't, so too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, I don't know, every day now, you know, as a corporation, every day you just go, I cannot believe they're doing this to me again and again.
What,
and again.
Making you pay taxes?
No, the way they do it. I mean, it's so complex, and there's so many weird little rules, and there's so, I will admit that as my company has grown, I've grown to have a very, very adversarial relationship with the IRS, you know, and not in a way that, you know, I'm not in any trouble or anything else, but I got to say, I don't feel like I owe them anything, you know, that, you know, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's, I'm not going to break any laws. We have spent a lot of time staying within code, you know, but we're moving.
A little offensive to me is that here in there's a benefit to being in the United States that Apple benefited from being in the U.S., I think. Mm-hmm. And so there is a responsibility that comes along with it. If you didn't want to pay taxes, you could move to Trinidad and Tobago. You know, you don't have to.
They are injecting probably, if you include the employees, you know, the amount of taxes that their employees you know, make, they're probably injecting $10 billion of taxes a year into, you know, into the U.S.
I just
economy.
Hear a lot of business owners saying, hey, I'm, you know, they're killing me with the taxes. But you know, go drive down the street that's built with taxes. Go on the interstate that's built with taxes. I mean, we are constantly benefiting from the taxes paid.
And you should definitely pay.
And if somebody doesn't pay their fair share.
But what is fair share, I guess, is the question.
And I agree, Congress screwed it up.
It's, you know, and the thing is that the onus right now is on Congress to fix it. And until they do that, what they can expect is everyone will use every legal means to not pay more taxes than they have to. And that includes the individuals who go to H&R Block. That includes the corporations who will move things to Ireland. That includes me moving my gear. You know, we're moving my gear from out of California because I get taxed on it every year. You know, like, you know, and it'll be shipped out of another state.
People understand, what happens is that Congress adds loopholes at the behest of different groups. It's to benefit different groups. And a good example that everybody's probably aware of is the mortgage tax credit. You get credit for the interest you pay on your home mortgage, which Congress used as a way to incent people to buy houses. Whether that was good public policy or not, I don't know. But that was the point. And so, okay, we'll give you a tax break for your mortgage interest. We'll multiply that times 1,000 tax breaks for a huge variety of arcane things. And then suddenly you get a tax code that even an individual paying taxes can barely understand.
Yeah.
But unfortunately what happens is individuals file their 1040 EZ and they pay the full percent. And a big corporation or even a small one like yours or mine can afford to hire specialists who know how to play the game. So,
but I mean, it needs to be fixed. I mean, I think that they need to close the loopholes and then lower the overall taxes and close the loopholes so that you're actually.
And that's not going to happen because Congress wants to use taxes as a way of promoting certain behaviors.
And so, I guess what I'd say is that it offends me that they blame anyone but themselves for what they're in. That's what I think. That's the problem. You know, they've created this problem. It's on their head. And if they want to fix it, they should. But otherwise, they should just back off.
You mean Congress?
Yeah.
So is this a black eye? Let's get back to the issue at hand, which is Apple. Is this a black eye to Apple?
I don't think so.
Well, it can be. I mean, this is exactly the sort of situation where the historic Apple position of we don't have to talk, we don't have to, we're going to maintain our bubble, and we're going to control the news story is not going to work. So that's why it's not surprising that Tim Cook is willing to go out there and put that message out there. You can imagine 5 years ago, maybe even 6 years ago, a time when there would be a kind of a terse statement made out that, okay, well, we're not doing anything illegal, we're not doing anything wrong, we continue to excel and hire people, and we're making the best personal computers known to mankind, goodbye. But yeah, they really do have to at least stay ahead of this.
Well, I think that one of the things they did really well was they underlined, you know, we do not have accounts in the Cayman Islands. We do not have things right. That are pure shelters. We have built.
It could be worse.
No, but the thing is, there's a lot of companies that are doing things that are a lot more complicated. And I think what Apple doesn't want to do is be wrapped up into a scandal about people who are just moving money around, you know, for no reason. I mean, Apple has definitely structured their company to build around it, but they're not doing a lot of paper corporations, to avoid taxes.
Well, also, this is a pretty safe target for the Senate.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't see them pull Exxon up there, right? Who I would imagine their books are not as clean as Apple's, or perhaps they do the same kind of throwing money around. But then you've got, you know, representatives from Oklahoma and Texas and people who are involved in the oil industry who say, well, no, we can't do that because that's in our backyard. But rather, what are they going to do? They're going to go after Apple and what, irritate Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer and a few California representatives. And it's easy, you know, because John McCain can ask his tech support question and, you know, we all kind of giggle about that. But if you really want to go after this stuff, talk to the companies like GE and Exxon and who were doing this stuff for years and years and years.
Google does the same thing, almost exactly with the Irish IP and the whole thing.
And Starbucks and Amazon.
I'm sure everybody does.
Even small tech companies do it. I mean, it's
I would do it. I don't know how.
Well, I mean, we're even. I mean, we do more. I'm going to Sydney.
Well, you do a lot of international business,
and we're getting ready. We're not there yet, but we're about to stop bringing the money back in.
Right.
You know, like we're going to start structuring because I'm doing enough work outside the country. It's not that we're structuring anything to hide money. It's just like, well, if we're going to make it out there, why would I bring it back in and pay 35% when I can leave it somewhere else?
Right. Cook did take an opportunity to ask about to talk a little bit about intellectual property to the committee. I don't know if these are the right people to talk to, but he says we need much more work on intellectual property in this country. He was speaking about bootleg Apple stores in China, but more specifically about the slowness of the U.S. court system. He says as a tech company, the U.S. court system is currently structured in such a way it's currently difficult to get the protections a technology company needs because the cycle's too long. By the time we get
By the time they try to block
resolution with Samsung, doesn't matter anymore.
What he's saying is by the time we can't block Samsung because it's obsolete by the time it's blocked.
Right. For us, intellectual property is so important to our company. I'd love to see this system strengthened to protect it. I love it. Tim Cook gets called on the carpet about taxes. He says, "But another thing."
Yeah. While I'm up here, while I have your ear, let me tell you what I'm upset about.
good for him. I like that. All right. I don't think we need to say more about the taxes, but that is the big Apple story of the day. So I think we should mention that. However, there are some other Tim's response by the tax question. Apple pays all the taxes we owe. And that really is the right answer. You know, if you don't like it, change the law. Apple has real operations in real places with Apple employees selling real products to real customers. We pay all the taxes we owe, every single dollar. We not only comply with the laws, we comply with the spirit of the laws. The tax code has not kept up with the digital age. And in fact, and we'll talk about this when we come back from the break, there's going to be a Mac made in the U.S., and it's not anything that exists today. Da-da-da-dum!
Where's our squirrel?
He did say they'll be assembled in Texas.
Interesting.
Dum-dum-dum-dum! Our show today brought to you by, very appropriately enough, LegalZoom.com. If you are not a corporation, there are some real benefits to you, and you can do it. Maybe you've been saying, I can't do this. It's too expensive, too complicated. You can do it yourself at LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom's not a law firm. It's a self-help site that'll walk you through the process of doing what you need to do to set up, say, an LLC or a corporation, to a trademark or copyright your intellectual property, to do a patent, an NDA, and more. And for your family, they do wills. So an LLC, a corporation, $99 is the starting price. A will, $69. You can establish a living trust there. It is really important. I think this discussion highlights this, that you work in a way that you're cognizant of what the law demands, and you do exactly what is right and not anymore. And that's exactly what this is about. It's not going to be tax help, by the way. We're talking an LLC. There you go. That's what I used. S-Corp, C-Corp. Trademarks. Chad did that. I love that.
It's better than just trying to go out and search the internet to try to figure out how you're supposed to do this.
Yeah. That would be wrong.
Let's Google
and
this.
And it's a lot more affordable than getting a lawyer. Although LegalZoom's legal plan will get you help from an attorney. I like this, too. At fixed prices, preset prices, you choose the attorney in the state you are operating in, and they have profiles and unedited customer reviews, so you can get a good idea of what that attorney will offer you. And you get to ask questions. There's lots of questions that you might come up as you fill out these forms, and this is a great way to do that. LegalZoom is a great way. I highly recommend it to get this work done at an affordable price. And if you're a startup, this is something you ought to know about. If you just had kids, this is something you really ought to know about. LegalZoom.com. Use our offer code MBW at checkout. We'll give you $10 off just as a way of saying thank you for mentioning us. LegalZoom.com. Offer code MBW. All right, let me go back to this story because I got excited and I want to read it to you exactly as written. But apparently, Tim Cook did mention this new Mac at the Senate hearing. But now, where is this? Oh, there it is. A new model in an existing family. What does that mean? Is it a new iMac?
Mac Mini Pro?
It'll be made in Texas, but he gave it an interview at Politico. He said it'll be an iteration of an existing family. It won't be just a collection of parts shipped from overseas, assembled in the U.S. That'll be parts from Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kentucky, and Texas.
Mac Mini. That'd be the easiest one.
I think this is, marketing thing. I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, 90% of Apple products sold will continue to be made in China.
I don't know about that. I think that I see it more as a trial balloon to see how well they could do this. Because if you think about what's the advantage of Apple doing a U.S.-made Mac strictly as a PR sort of thing? And none of Apple's customers care as yet that their stuff is all made in China. So that's not really an advantage. However, if they can figure out a way to reduce cost of shipping components from here, there, and everywhere. If there's a specific type of device they're making right now where there are stuff where a lot of the components have to be manufactured here, or key components that are expensive to ship are manufactured here in the United States, it behooves them to see, well, let's try that and see how well it works.
It also makes sense.
I think it's a trial balloon.
It makes sense then that would be a completely new product. Because maybe they'll charge a little more for it, too, as a result of it being made in the U.S.
Because you can't compare it.
They can test that, and then there's no comparison. So what would it be? We know MacBook, it's a Mac, right?
A Mac Pro.
Mac Pro.
Mac Mini Pro.
Mac a new
Pro.
Mac Pro.
The Mac Pro.
A modular Mac Pro. You think they'll do that?
I think that would be the easiest one. Like I think
iPod
displays...
Sucks.
iPod sucks.
I think that...
All these Midwestern Lutheran grandmas, get them knitting. They're retirees. They have nothing better. Well, they've better things to do, but you know, not quite so profitable.
It's our full employment program for Midwestern grandmas.
Exactly.
I'm going with an education model.
Ah.
See, I would not think that the education model, because I would think that those are more cost sensitive. I think a Mac Pro or Mac Mini Pro or Mac Pro Mini or whatever is something that is going after a market that's less cost sensitive, that you could charge more for. Than with things that are going to be tighter.
It's tough. Budget. You know, my high school has a one-to-one program, the high school my kids go to, and I serve on their board, where entering freshmen used to get a MacBook. And Apple stopped educational discounts to any appreciable point. It's going to cost them $1,200, and they can't afford it. So they're giving them Lenovos.
How'd that turn out?
I don't know yet. It'll be freshmen. freshmen. I'm sitting on the board meeting. I'm going, I don't know.
Think of the children, Apple.
Think of the children.
Yeah.
But, you know, I understand why.
Yeah.
You know, these are, they're ruggedized. There's something Apple can't offer. They're ruggedized. I was pushing for Chromebooks, to be honest. If there's a budget issue, get them Chromebooks.
Right.
But they want full operating systems. And they do video and audio editing. Right. These are set up. The Macs were set up so they could record classes and listen to them later. I mean, they had all this stuff that made a lot of sense.
And I think it'll be an exciting year.
Sad. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I go with education because I think it's a fairly predictable market. They have a season in which they sell these things. So along with Andy's trial balloon setup, it does give you more control over your inventory, when you need to make it, what the size of that market might be. And it does allow you to make kind of that oddball Mac that you're not going to try to distribute to everybody on Earth.
It doesn't affect it doesn't affect the chain, the supply. The,
right. It really is kind of its own little device. And that's where you start, you know, your Easy Bake Oven plant to make just these things, see how it goes. And then from there, you can expand.
Right. You'd also have to think that given that the one of the greatest advantages to manufacturing overseas is the cost of labor, is that you'd sort of be thinking, you'd want to think about devices that can be mostly automated assembly. So as opposed to fiddly, like handheld consumer devices that you really do need to have human beings, you know, slapping these things together. So but I think it would be a lower volume thing rather than a higher volume thing.
More good news. Of course, Apple's inventory of MacBook Airs is gone to zero in many cases. That's usually a sign that a new device is coming out. Tie that with the announcement of the Haswell processors at the beginning of June, WWDC a week or two later.
Yeah.
I think we're going to see MacBook Airs. Now, it's the 13-inch MacBook Airs that are no longer available at retailers like Amazon, B&H, Mac Connection, and Mac Mall.
So wait, what do we think?
Retina.
Retina with the touchscreen. How do you like the touchscreen?
I don't know about touchscreen, but I do think Retina makes sense for WWDC. I mean, that is the pros.
You almost gave me a heart attack. I like a touchscreen. I got to tell you, I'm enjoying it. I have the Chromebook Pixel, and I have this
Windows 8. I keep on doing it to my current laptop. I keep on going like
we're
this.
We're so used to touch on iOS, and I admit, for a desktop, that may be less
valuable. I started testing the Pixel, and I find myself now just going, I don't understand.
I love it.
Yeah, it's great.
And I think OS X would lend itself perfectly well to that.
I think especially blends it well because they're merging them.
I think you're going to need a new version of OS X to do it.
Absolutely. Right?
So, when would you release that?
I mean, you might announce it, but to also announce a touch-based computer that you can't touch yet, no. So September for that, when they roll out that possibly. But I think for WWDC, you're really looking at the Pro model. So Retina display, a new refresh of the MacBook Pro. It would be lovely if they had a new Mac Pro of some kind, please.
Can they do a Retina Air, 13-inch Air?
Probably not.
I doubt it, yeah.
They need better battery technology, or they need substantially better power management and, you know, better LEDs, lighting. Everything needs to be more efficient in order to get the battery life. Because they right now, the formula is still the same. You get Retina, you get lightness, or you get good battery life, and you can pick two of the three. And until that formula changes, we won't be able to get products. Because Apple's not going to sell a Retina MacBook Air that gets an hour or 2 hours of battery life.
Curses foiled again.
Also, they need the price points where they are right now. So they would really have to be in the position where they can say 13-inch MacBook Air, same price, and now it's Retina. Because it's they're already having some problem. I'm sorry, It's okay for them to have the MacBook Pros with Retina displays where they're really a super premium pricing, so long as they still have at least a moderate to premium pricing model underneath it. So if they were to raise the price of the $999 MacBook Air to make it a Retina display, that would be a big, big problem, I think.
I'd be happy with Haswell in a 13-inch.
That's what I think.
The 13-inch MacBook Pro is going to be the Retina Air, Leo. It's not much heavier, not
you're right.
Much thicker, so much more.
Yeah, the Retina 15-inch is pretty thin.
Yeah. And the 13-inch is pretty light, so that'll be your Retina MacBook Air.
Okay. What would the resolution be on a Retina 13? Mm. What is it?
I forget what it is now. It's not 2500, that's the 15-inch. But it's pretty good, especially if you put it in the scaled resolutions, it can get pretty high. Because in the Retina resolution, there's not enough pixels for me, but when I scale it, it becomes much better.
I want it. I've been holding off. That's why I'm still using this thing.
Right. I broke down and got one.
I got what?
I got an Air. Just as low.
Oh, no. You're crazy, man.
It's like the little shuttle.
There's going to be new ones at any minute now, man.
I got that. I got it a month ago.
Man.
I knew it was coming, though, and I got it a month ago. I was like, I can't wait any longer.
I know. That's what I'm doing. I'm suffering with this.
No, I was.
Till.
It's literally just when I'm when I'm in United Economy. I just need something I can actually open and work on.
Well, that's a problem, isn't it?
I mean, that's why I have 11 inch. It's like that's the smallest thing that I can open so that I can.
Because you get. Why are you flying economy?
I don't do it very often.
Think of all the tax savings.
I pay the $10 for the extra legroom, and then I use my computer on my lap, and the 15-inch fits fine that way.
No, it works fine. Yeah, Economy Plus on United is
fine. The worst thing is to have the notebook on the tray, yeah. And then the guy in front of you leans back.
I've seen someone fold one.
I'm waiting for that to happen.
So I always, this is my little travel tip, is that when someone's in front of you, until they put it back, you always turn your screen so that the angle of your screen... Yeah. Goes past where when you have the tray open, it goes past that. So if they open it, it'll slide behind it. Because I've actually seen someone hit that, and it's really cool when someone really comes back quickly. It takes your screen and it folds it about 30 degrees, and then it just, you know, just changes colors.
But I travel with the 15 inch all the time, and I've never had a problem using it just because I put it on my lap. I mean, it's not as comfortable as a tray, but it works fine.
But you get like the Economy Plus or whatever.
Economy Plus is really all you need.
That's an interesting question, though. Renee, why do you travel with a 15? Because I switch to the iPad for most of my travel. But if I really did need a MacBook for all my traveling, I would so totally buy something smaller. Because the first time I took a trip with something smaller than a 15-inch laptop, that was the last time I ever was going to travel with a 15-inch.
So there's two reasons for that. One is I gave my Air to my sister, the same reason, you know, Leo gave his Air away. And I'm not going to buy another one until WWDC. And the other reason is most of my travels these days have been to do a lot of video. And Final Cut Pro works so much better on a Retina Mac than it does on an Air. It ends up saving me time, even though it's a lot of effort.
Okay. I give you permission then to carry 15
minutes. See, and we do production on mine. We do streams.
Everybody else. Take one of these instead. It works just fine.
I have that too. That's for the comic books.
You should see, Andy, you should see me get out of the TSA, you know, when I get to the thing, because I have two retinas and an Air and then two different iPads. And it's like this slow process. It's five bins every single time. And
jeez, Louise.
They make fun of me.
Well, for me, the fun part is, like, again, I try to travel very, very light. The only thing that
I think about that.
Occasionally problem is because I'm a one man operation. I don't have like an arm, a David Lean style movie production kit.
Just the gold unit, you know, behind him.
Exactly. But the only times that I'm really, really heavily laden down are when I'm testing phones. I might travel with four phones for various reasons. But the fun part is. I travel with one carry-on. It's a hard-sided carry-on, and I can almost always tell when they get to my bag, because that's when like the conveyor comes to complete halt, because they just see this like NASA satellite image of a nuclear plant in North Korea, and they're trying to figure out what part of this is cables, what part of these are different batteries. He can't possibly have 9 different battery packs for 8 different. No, okay, let's just pop this thing.
So help you if there's a microphone in there, because that's indecipherable.
It is. It turns out Countryman mics are really popular.
Really?
With TSA.
They go, what is that?
You got to take them out of your bag.
It looks like a fuse or something?
Yeah, they never want to tell you why they're looking
these
in your
the
bag.
Little,
so.
We use these little tiny microphones, the Madonna microphones
little,
that go on your
coils,
face.
Because you end up coiling them up. And it's funny.
I think they look like fuses.
And they never want to tell you why they pulled you out, like what part of your bag. But fortunately, since I go through the metal detector four times a week on average, through a process of deduction, I have figured out, you know, which components in my bag. So I start pulling them out and they go, oh, you don't need to take that out. And I'm like, yes, I do.
I know exactly what.
That second rolling thing, then you have to wait for a guy to come over and start going through everything.
Yeah.
I just want to show you the image of what Alex carries with him when he's checking into the airport. He showed us this. This is from your Google Plus.
Yeah. That's actually a small kit.
For that yet, Alex?
That's the small kit. It is.
That's his own. He brings his own.
He's like Cher. Like he has to have a look for every single event.
I had another one in there somewhere that was
his own truck.
That one was not my own trolley, but I do check my own trolley sometimes.
After you halo jump, Alex, how long does it take you to find all the gear and reamass it?
After you hail a cab?
Halo jump out of the airplane.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, the key is you keep them all tied to you.
Yeah.
The only problem is when you hit the trees, then you get stuck. No,
I promise you this, what I'm about to say is going to latch into your brain, and you're going to get the engineers online. This is going to revolutionize your entire business travel. What if you were to invent a type of luggage where after you empty out each case, you can snap the cases together to form either an editing suite or a hotel room.
You've got enough material to make a hotel room, I think.
You know, what's funny is that there are ones that we actually lock. Some of these we'll stack up and make them part of the tables because we're running out of space. And there are ones, the road ones that we actually drive to locations, you can actually take the tops oftentimes and put them next to them. They form tables and stuff like that. So it can be. But this stuff is Pelican case has become kind of you've seen the Pelican case collection.
I've seen it in the hall. I would go through the hall or downstairs in the basement.
No, my rollaway is a Pelican case. They make a version of that that fits in overheads and 15, is like kitted out for. Yeah, exactly. But it's specifically kitted out for like a cloth zippered liner inside.
Yep.
And that's just like absolutely the best case I've ever. It's totally revolutionized the way I travel.
After you picked it on Mac Break Weekly, I bought one for my camera, and that's what I roll my camera gear around.
What's funny is with the 1510, you wonder why they made it that size. And if you get on one of those if you get on one of those little puddle jumpers, little turboprops. Mm-hmm. The 1510 is the largest bag that you can have that'll fit in the overhead, and it fits it fits as if it was made for it. You know,
by spending money now,
and the most important part is because it's hard sided. If you get caught and all the overheads are full, you can hand that off and check it, and you don't think it's going to get crushed. And the second part is if you're like me and you are packing you got 3 minutes to check out, and so you're desperately stuffing things into bags. You cannot overstuff this, and therefore make it too large to fit inside the overhead.
Yeah, get the dividers. Don't get the foam.
Yeah, I got the dividers on your suggestion.
Yeah, the dividers are the way to go, and then you don't get the foam. And there it is. And then the key is, then you take if you're checking these, then we take zip ties.
Yeah.
So that you know, makes it a little inconvenient to break into them because we got a lot of gear in there.
Oh, yeah, because anybody could, but they'd have to have pliers.
It's just not that you can just open it. You know, you have to think about it. And, you know, that's all you're really trying to do is make it inconvenient because you're not allowed to lock them anyway. But the
TSA could snip those.
But yeah, they do because they're going to look into them. They're going to,
So why don't you just get a TSA covenant. Lock?
Because they wear out. The zip ties are actually better. And the zip ties aren't any more secure or any less secure than the locks.
Do you recommend Desert Tan, OD Green, or Black?
Okay, all of ours are black.
Alex, important question. How do you cut those zip ties open, given that you weren't allowed to take a blade onto the plane?
Good question. Here's the answer. Is in your own bag that you check that has your clothes in it, in the front pocket, you put there's two things that are in the front pocket. One is a Leatherman, because you can check it. And the other one is the straps that you use to strap all those bags to your cart when it shows up, so you can strap them all down. Anyway, so the straps and the Leatherman goes in the front. And if you can't do that, the thing to remember is the way that the zip ties work, if you just twist them, they will break. So you get a fork and you stick them in there and twist it around. That's all. You just need a metal fork. Plastic forks don't work so well, they break.
We're going to take a break.
This week in travel.
I never go anywhere.
I know.
You know, what's funny is our guys can talk about this for hours because it's all. I mean, we deal with this so
it's like
Liana still holds the record. Liana Lahua.
Yeah,
23 bags.
23 bags.
Checked on her own.
They're not all hers though.
Well, they were all of our kit. But I mean, it was our kit. But I mean, one person checking 23 bags. That's the record.
And you pay $50 per extra bag, right?
Yeah,
that's a lot.
It's overage. Yeah, media rate. If you're not in media rate, it's like $200.
Oh, there's a media rate.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know about that. I'm media.
Yeah.
So I could just say media. You just say media rate.
Nah, you gotta have a ID.
A special media ID.
Yeah.
Press pass.
Yes.
Oh, all right.
Business card that says media.
Yeah. Media.
Yeah.
And can I wear a fedora with a little thing that says press in the rim? Press. Would that work?
Yes. Little camera with a flashbulb in it, and you get restaurants for free. You get bus rides, taxis.
He's pulling something out here. While you're looking, I'm going to just say Roberto is in the chat room, Throwboy Roberto Hoyos, and he's got just 4 days left on his Kickstarter campaign. They're so close to their goal of $20,000, and they've added a limited edition backer reward. Remember the ICEO? It's back, baby. So this is to get Throwboy into the next level, and we love Throwboy. They've made some great Twit pillows, and if you look at the rewards, there's a variety of them. You could pledge $1 or $5 or $10 or $20. But if you want the ICEO, you got to pledge $100. There's only 16 left. This is that's for international backers. This is 25 left for the U.S. Limited edition. Only 1,200 were made. If you want the ICEO, quick
go to Kickstarter for the special Throwboy Chat Pillow collection.
Time is running out. Tell your friends.
Yeah, you only got 4 days.
But first get yours, then tell your friends.
Roberta.
Your ICO pillow will be shipped to Ireland through the Netherlands before, so expect it 2 weeks.
As always. Our show today brought to you by those great folks at Audible.com. I'm ready for a new book. I just finished your book, Pictures at a Revolution. Loved it, Andy. And then I watched all five movies. It's about the Academy Award nominees in 1968. It was lovely. So thank you for a great recommendation. I really enjoyed it.
Wasn't that a great, great story that made you so happy you don't work in the movie industry?
Oh, God. Just the things you go through. And what I actually came away with is huge admiration for the dedication of people like Warren Beatty and others. Because in order to make this artistic venture, the crap you have to put up with, just endless.
Even if you are Warren Beatty kind of at the top of your career, you have to be able to tell the studios, you're right. I suppose you shouldn't be making movies with me then, and then walk away.
Yep. Pretty great story. I really enjoyed it. But I'm looking for a new one now. I've got a few on my list here. I just got Silver Linings Playbook, the novel. See, I like reading the novels of great movies.
Messes up the movie.
Well, I've seen the movie, so now the movie's messed up the novel. I just finished the Patrick Rothfuss series. That's great. Wise Men's Fear is the most recent one. I've got The Hunger Games. Saw the movie, but I thought I'd read the book. Great North Road, Peter F. Hamlin. I'm just deciding which I should. Maybe you have a recommendation, Andy. We're just telling you about Audible.com, great audio bookstore. If you go to audible.com/MacBreak, what you'll be doing is getting a free book by signing up for the Gold account. That's a book a month, but your first 30 days are free. Your first credit is free. Cancel in the first 30 days, pay nothing. You keep the book forever. However, and they're recommending, by the way, The Mountains Echo just came out, or will come out. Yeah, it just came out today. Now available from the author of The Kite Runner. But what are you? Oh, what was that? Control-Alt-Delete. What was that one, Chad? Reboot and Rebuild Your Business. Oh. Guess not.
Also known as burning down the factory for the insurance money.
What are you listening to?
Next up on my queue is a really neat book on the Apollo landings. I've been usually more often than not when I look for an Audible version of one of my favorite books, I will find it there. And I really, for some reason, wanted to have like a storytelling version of Apollo. Could not find like my favorite book, Man on the Moon. But Moonshot, The Inside Story of Man's Greatest Adventure by Dan Parry. It is really a linear storytelling sort of story about, again, how we got people on the surface of the moon during Apollo 11, starting with the inability to even launch a man into suborbit. When you look at this story, it's such a compelling drama because you realize that it's not really about scientists figuring out solving a really complex technical problem. It really was a breakthrough in project management about breaking up a really complex task into six critical different areas and then finding exactly the right obsessive, compulsive, tenacious engineers to attack and solve that problem. And the way that all these pieces fit together and actually made history is I've read this story in so many forms with so many different pieces of source materials, and that never, ever gets tired to me. If this isn't my favorite book on the subject, it still hits all the points that I like. It comes very well recommended by people I trust. And you get a good 11 hours for the storytelling there. The other good thing about this is that there are a couple of books that are really good about the space program but terrible as audiobooks. The project manager on the lunar lander wrote a really wonderful critical book about this. I mean, you really want to get this book to find out all the problems that had to be solved to build something that complicated. But he talks like an engineer. Like, basically the only thing that he saves you from is that he didn't actually tell you the thread pitch of the screws used to connect one of the control yokes to the linkage. But that's pretty much the only technical detail he left out. This book is more of it's not designed for engineers. It's not designed for historians. It's designed for people who have seen that YouTube clip 80 million times and think, well, gee, I wonder how that happened. And this is a good way to find that out.
I love being of a certain age that I can actually remember that moon landing. I'm watching those Walter Cronkite broadcasts. And now Apollo 11 going to the moon.
I'm envious. There's so few times when for my generation, it seems like kids, you're not going to remember this, but when I was a kid, people of the same sex could not marry. I know it seems stupid. I know it's a fact of life now, but let me tell you what it was like the day when we, you know, you got that news report that in this Commonwealth of Massachusetts, two men and two women could marry each other. I really wish that I'm envious that about when I was a kid, man had no, human beings had never stepped foot on another celestial body.
Yeah.
And now for the rest of my life, I will live in a world in which human beings have walked on the surface of another celestial body.
It's pretty amazing. Neat. Well, and one of the things that I got from that Hollywood book, Pictures at a Revolution, was how controversial, because Guess Who's Coming to Dinner was one of the nominated films, how controversial interracial marriage was, and illegal, in fact, until just before the movie came out. You should read this book just to realize how controversial this was.
Yeah.
And they thought, well, we can make this movie. It'll never play in the South because it's just too controversial. And it's just, and then you watch the movie and it's almost humorous.
Right.
And they had to make Sidney Poitier, who's the black fella going to get married to the white girl, they had to make him like Mother Teresa. He is a doctor who graduated from Stanford and works with the World Health Organization.
Also, critically, he's not American. He's a foreigner.
Right. Yeah. It's really interesting. Anyway, this is why I love Audible, because it brings new ideas to life. I can't wait till the Robert Caro book. I listened to the first three Johnson books. I can't wait till the fourth Johnson book. Is available on Audible, because those are great too. And I find that these long biographies and history books are kind of hard to read. I fall asleep if I hold the book. But when I'm in the car or at the gym or doing the housework, I can get through long books.
That's my big when I'm cleaning my house.
Yeah,
it's like the moment. Well, I'm out of NPR.
Right.
I'm out of Twit to listen to.
Right.
And then I just start going through these books. And right now I'm listening to Rwanda Inc., which is usually part of my stuff. It's a great interested in that.
Here's the problem. You're only going to get one book, and it's hard to choose. But think of it this way. Yeah, every month it's an exciting time when you get that new credit. What am I going to get this month?
Rwanda Inc.
All right, Rwanda Inc. That's another choice. Moonshot, Rwanda Inc.
There you go.
Audible.com/MacBreak. You're going to love it. Start today. That's all I can say. I listen on my Sonos speakers, so I have it throughout the house.
I need to get some Sonos speakers.
You could, because then the house resonates to
the book. They're expensive.
It's really expensive.
So I keep on going, I'm going to get it, and then
and then it holds your breath.
Can't go back though, Alex. It's like the Hue lights. Your whole house has to be wireless, everything.
Have you played with the Hue light yet, Renee?
I have them. I got them for Christmas. I have them everywhere.
Well, we talked last week, but did you? So I set up an if this then that when the sun comes up, my lights start pulsing in multiple colors. I turned that one off quick.
One of the ones that's interesting is one of my writers, Georgia, both her and her husband have iPhones, and now they're, they don't want to set it up so you leave the house and they turn off. They're trying to duel for control of the device now.
Yeah. You need more than one iPhone.
Yeah.
I just, that's the geofencing. There's the new stuff Hue does is so cool. I bought more bulbs. I have 9 now. I have them in my bedroom.
I have this idea. I need about 20 of them. So I
have about 12
clean out
so
the
far.
Apple Store.
So Hue, Sonos. Pretty soon the whole house is just going to have a life of its own long after your death.
Future, Leo. The future.
The future's here. You're watching Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. Chris Breen from MacWorld.com. Alex Lindsay from ThePixelCourt.com. And Andy Anaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. Old media. I loved it. Marissa Meyer, along with the announcement that they're going to update Flickr. We'll talk about that in a second. I love that she said, and we're consolidating all 500 Yahoo employees in New York City in the old New York Times building and saying, isn't that great? The new media moving. I don't feel like Yahoo is new media anymore, right.
Yeah, they're kind of not. They're not old media. They're kind of like middle-aged.
So two big Yahoo stories that are kind of relevant to the Mac world, because I think a lot of Mac folks use Flickr. A lot of photographers do.
Mm-hmm.
Complete Flickr redesign. And, boy, a big change in the pricing that I'm not sure I really like. And then they're really going to make Flickr ad-supported regardless, right? You have to pay $500 a year if you don't want ads. Nobody's going to do that.
Those of us who are
grandfathered in on the pro accounts can keep going.
Right.
And so we'll be every year we'll pay $50, which is a lot more, twice as much actually. But we're grandfathered in, but new users, you either get ads in a terabyte or no ads in a terabyte.
Or is it $50?
$50 a year for pro.
Yeah, see.
Right.
It's, but Wascal, you have to have an existing account. You cannot sign up now for that.
$500, but isn't $500 for unlimited storage basically to duplicate what you get with a pro account?
No. No, yes, it is. Because if you're free, this is the other thing. We get a terabyte as pro users.
No, you get.
I'm confused.
You get a it's the pricing structure is that now it's like a good news, bad news sort of thing. And I'm making sure that I look this up to, so hopefully I don't misspeak. The good news is that before the changeover, you could a free account was very limited, very useful but very limited. You can only see like most recent something like 100 pictures that have been posted. They're all being stored, but only 100, the last 100 would be accessible. Now a free account gives you 1 terabyte of storage, which is, and they have a little nice, a cute little like web app sort of thing, so you can see how big are your pictures. They are eight megapixel phone pictures. Great, you can store 350,000 of these pictures for free forever. They have a new service called Doubler that costs $500 a year with a cap of 2 terabytes, and what they're trying to do is make sure that people don't take advantage of free storage for 8 kajillion photos forever.
But who's going to pay $500? I mean, you go to Smug Mug or somewhere. I mean, that's crazy.
It's complicated. Most people are, I think.
So, okay, now I did get it wrong. So if you are you are grandfathered in as the pro account, you still could do $25 a year pro account, no ads, 1 terabyte.
Okay.
If you pay $50 a year, you get the top-of-the-line program. That's no ads. And unlimited, I guess. I don't know.
Because remember, $25 a year was only the old cost if you bought 2 years in advance. I think the actual annual cost was $35, $36.
Right.
Something like that. So it's not as though they increased, they didn't increase the price a whole hell of a lot to give you that.
Well, and you're a big Flickr user. What do you think? Do you like the new Flickr, Andy?
I love it. I still, Flickr, I think, has always had the, for me, has always had an edge over other things, because sometimes you do want a service that tries to be everything. And Flickr, I think, was the best there was at everything. There are other 500px was great if you wanted the best presentation. You could get Instagram was better for social. You know, all these other things for Amazon Web Services better for if you wanted to like do deep links. I'm sorry, I know I'm on Wi-Fi right now because my network.
You used to look so good, Andy.
Sorry about that. Well, again, I thought in honor of my Apollo pick, I'm giving you a simulation of what it was like to have live video from the Apollo crew module while they're 180,000 miles away from Earth. But it's so the advantage is that I like uploading my pictures. I like being able to write more than 2 sentences about it, because sometimes I want to kind of blog about it more than anything else. I want to be able to have control over who gets to see it, whether it's the entire world, just my friends and family, just my family, that sort of stuff. So point for point for point for point. And if you want to make use of your pictures, I think that Flickr was the only one that really covered all those bases in one service. If you want to put all your photos in one place, that's always been for me the place to put it. The only bad thing about it is that it's always had this 2005, 2006, 2007 interface. And now they have something that's really, really lovely, very, very pretty. I had it in front of me, and then I navigated away from it so I could...
So you pay $50 for a year, and the only thing you get is no ads.
And the 500, man, it's like 1 extra terabyte.
And you double the amount for 1 terabyte. So there's no unlimited at all anymore. Except the people like us are grandfathered in.
Right. But given that the service doesn't support raw uploading to begin with, you're always talking about JPEGs. A terabyte,
it's an awful
lot. That's one hell of a lot of pictures.
Why would you pay $450 more for 2 terabytes?
I don't know.
Well, also, is there anything about video in there? It seems like the basic account gives you 3 minutes of video. Also, does you get more video from $500?
They've expanded this top to bottom, where now there's also they've expanded the limits for HD video. Now you can get 10 or like a Vimeo sort of effect, longer videos, higher resolution. And again, it still comes off under your normal cap there.
Part of the reason I don't know, it's cuckoo because it's not linear. It's a very crazy thing. And as a pro user, they actually encourage you to discontinue your pro account and go back to the free account, and they'll rebate you. But neither of these are available if you're a pro user.
makes the kind of sense that doesn't.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now, Google also redid its Google Plus. And I think it's beautiful.
It took me a little while to get used to it. I spend most of my time, you know, most of my social time on Google Plus. And,
I am now. I've been using it a lot. I'm kind of so loving it.
Look at this. I love the new when you go to share and it kind of just like pops into a window that you can. Anyway, it's
very lovely.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I think that it's. This is a bit
more
modern.
It's a two-lane highway now.
Now, one of the things you got
to... You can go three-lane.
Two or three, depending on your...
If you open it up wide.
You're on a retina, and you're seeing three.
Yeah.
One of the other things that's interesting from an Apple point of view is Hangouts. They're going after a unified messaging solution, which really pretty much goes directly against Apple's Messenger.
Well, and it's really set up that you can do anything. I mean, you want to call someone, you want to have a video chat, you want to have a text chat. It's all, you know, it's really becoming a kind of a unified experience.
Right.
It's kind of a BBM killer more than an iMessage killer.
Yeah.
It does so many things.
And on top of everything else, it's almost like having a private social network just for this one conversation you're having with your two friends, and it can go on forever. That's one of the things I like about it. This is like one solution for 100 different things. And if Apple finds a need to improve messages at this point, that's a huge win for every Apple user, because I think that's been kind of a stagnant app for a while. And I've been sort of trying to encourage the friends of mine that only want to be connected via iMessage to sort of, could I talk you into using something else?
And it's hard because the Apple stuff is all integrated. I mean, I think that's the problem that I have is that it's
so
easy. To
make sure that I have the right device in my hand, because you're using a system that only works with one.
It's cross-platform for iOS and Android, but there was nothing for BlackBerry or Windows Phone, so it's not really anything killer yet until I think they go everywhere.
Because you want to make sure you include that 5%.
Well, now, supposedly they're going to add SMS messaging, which would then make it fully cross-platform.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not as full-featured on Windows or maybe BlackBerry, but... So you remember I asked about the 50 billion apps. How do they know? Do they really know the 50 billionth? And by the way, Google, of course, responded at Google I.O. with 48 billion downloads. Right.
me too.
So there's a post by a guy named Benedict Evans who actually kind of charted all of this. Mm-hmm. And... plotted the data sets, and actually that looks like they're pretty parallel, doesn't it? Like Android and Apple growing roughly the same pace.
Well, Android's growing a lot faster.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just the raw number of people getting Android devices is higher. Yeah.
Well, do you think it's going to be a hockey stick that this elbow is going to turn into suddenly this?
I think it's keep on going up.
Yeah. Anyway, and do they now, Chad? You said they talked about how they counted it,
right? So they talked about which apps they counted. So,
because with Apple never revealed this information,
right? And he says through an email correspondence they did. And
this
so,
is from the Next Web. They actually wrote to them,
right? And so if you have bought an app, that counts as an app download,
even if you install it on multiple devices.
Correct. So if you install it on your iPad, your iPhone, then that's one download, app download.
That's both Google and Apple do it that way.
Correct. Yeah. And then also their apps that they include bundled on the device is not counted in that number. So whenever you have the iPod app, that's never counted. On top of that, the apps that are given to you by Apple for free, so like the podcasting app, that would count because you have to go and download it. And then that's pretty much true for both Apple and Google in terms of bundled apps on the device. So if your device...
But Google does offer for download some of its bundled apps.
Correct.
Whereas Apple does not.
Correct.
Yeah. And
updates don't count.
Apparently the 50 billionth download was by OK Go, an app by OK Go.
Those guys.
I love these guys. Yeah. They made a word game called Say the Same Thing. This was the 50 billionth app.
They're like a Renaissance band, Renaissance group.
Yeah, I mean, not only do they do those great videos, and they really became big because of that treadmill video that they put on YouTube.
Still amazing.
But now they have a word game app with, by the way, it's free with in-game purchases. Mm-hmm. Ad-free is $2.99, 20 bananas for a buck. I've bought enough donuts for a lifetime. I'm not buying any bananas.
You should grandfather you in, Leo. You should get unlimited donuts at some point.
I should.
I had a scare last night. I was trying to get Simpsons to work, and I guess the Origin servers were down because it wouldn't let me log in. And I thought, no! So I have a dream. Maybe you can help me with
yes.
this dream. I want to make a giant printout of my Simpsons land. So in order to do that, I'll have to do high-res screenshots. This is going to be so hard. I mean,
yeah, we can do that.
And then move it.
Yeah.
And then stitch them together with Photoshop.
Wouldn't even be that hard. And then the hard part is taking the photos.
And then do you have a big... Yeah, I'll do that. Then you have a big printer?
I don't have a huge printer. But
I have 19 by... I have the that Epson 19 by 14 printer.
I can... There's a guy I know. A guy who knows a guy who can print it on a cloth that's like as big as
yeah.
you want.
Yeah. I have a small dream. It's a dream.
So send me all the components. We'll put it together.
I'll stitch it into a big photo, and then I'll send you the big photo.
And I'll have it printed.
And I'll make it as high a resolution.
Yep. So you want to print it at one-to-one scale?
Yeah. So I can walk around in it. Part of it.
Wasn't there a Stephen Wright?
Hey, Homer. Hey, Bart. Wouldn't that be fun?
Here in Petaluma, we used a sign company, Barber Signs, to print out the OMG craft set. And they could print it on vinyl, so you could keep it with you, because paper is going to crinkle.
Good thinking.
I wonder if Photoshop would stitch that together automatically. You know the stitching function there?
I'm going to do this week and tapped out. No, that's what I was planning.
Just throw it in there and just say, go.
No, I will. That's exactly what I'm going to do, because I'll just make sure I have a little bit around each edge that's overlapping.
About 20-30% overlap?
Yeah, it should be able to stitch it.
Yeah.
How about a tattoo?
Even in sections, you might have to do it.
A tattoo would be good, but the key is to get that to get the land, because it's so perfect right now. It's so perfect.
And you want to capture that moment?
I want to capture it. It's perfect.
Before it all goes, before everyone starts rebelling.
Yes. Simpsons Camelot. Utopia.
Complaining.
Camelot. It is my little utopia. And I really realize the appeal of this. By the way, I do not recommend this program. It's available on iPhone and on iPad. I do not recommend this because I have spent so much time and I've spent way too much money. But really, if you think about it, the amount of time I've spent on it is really the cost.
It's Leo's Candy Crush.
It is Candy Crush, which is I will not play.
No.
I will not play Candy Crush.
I really manage my...
Another freemium app that I will not play.
I have to do things that will stop quickly, like Plants vs. Zombies,
yeah.
Field Runners.
Well, I'm trying to finish this game before Plants vs. Zombies 2 comes out.
Yeah.
Because I know I'll be completely consumed by that. Tapped Out is so great. Anyway, so... I need an intervention. I really do. Anyway,
all I can think about now is Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, now all I can think about is harvesting corn. All right, let's move on.
And we have a show title.
Yeah, all I can think about is harvesting corn. It's kind of sad. When you get to a certain age, that's what I was going to say, it is a utopia, and that's why I like it. Because as rough and crazy as this modern world of ours can be, I know there'll always be calm there.
There'll always be donuts.
There'll always be donuts. Here's another example of change I don't like. How many times have you and I gone down to that Union Square, or you know, the Apple Store across from Virgin?
Well, I used to go almost every day because it was a block from my office.
Yeah. Well, you've moved out too.
I have.
They're moving it to Union Square.
I'm moving it one block.
I don't care.
My complaint about that is
what?
Not tall enough. There's not enough Apple.
According to the San Francisco Chronicle's website, the SF Gate. They're going to do in San Francisco, and it really is in many ways their flagship store because San Francisco is so close to Apple. And it was on Stockton and Ellis right there on Market Street. It was a nice location, but it wasn't a pretty store. It was one of the first Apple stores. Yeah. This one's going to be more of a glass box, kind of like to compete with some of the New York stuff.
I just want to point out the Ginza store is like five stories high.
This looks like a mere two stories.
I'm wondering if it's a limit to the height that they're allowed to go. Because I think that's the same height as the old Levi's. So they're probably doing one of those little things. In San Francisco, there's so many building codes that a lot of people will literally just like keep the roof right where it is and then raise everything below it and build everything up under it. Because that way it's not a new construction. So I bet you that's what they're doing there.
They're actually, this is a big year for Apple retail. 20 stores in the U.S. will be renovated this year. And they're opening 30 new stores, mostly outside the U.S. As they continue to have huge success.
We just got a new one.
Did you?
Yeah,
in Montreal?
The South Shore, Brossard, yeah. Right across, Montreal Island, and then on the mainland, they just put a new one on Brossard, which is amazing.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, I have to say, with the whole stores, the idea of running one retail store kind of overwhelms me. I mean, we don't have
one. I know.
We think about it. We talk about, like...
What would you sell?
Pelican
like live streaming equipment.
Oh,
you know, like we do solutions. We're really good at it. You know, we have some skill.
Stick to your knitting.
We are pretty, you know. Well, we're now building.
I told Apple. I told Apple. I pulled him aside. I said, "Do not open retail stores. Look what happened to Gateway. It's a terrible idea."
Look at Dell.
Look at Dell. It's a horrible idea. I know I'm a visionary. On a square foot basis, again, Apple is the killer. New record retail revenues. Horace Dedeu at Asimco has a new graph. It is doing twice as well as number two, which is Tiffany, three times as well as Lululemon Athletica, 7% growth in visitors, a new record revenue of $57.6 per visitor.
I'm way over that average.
The average revenue per Apple store per quarter, $13 million. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Now, it's a little peaky if you look at that graph because, of course, holiday Christmas. Quarters are, yeah. Average visitor per store, $250,000 per store per quarter. That's significant.
Those
are
good numbers. Just in case you're wondering, if you're wondering how to measure these things,
it's up like 30%. Employment has steadied at about 110 per store, although the San Francisco store will have 400 employees.
Not all.
They still have no retail vice president.
Yeah. I guess they decided not to hire Ron Johnson back.
I was kind of surprised they didn't bring him back, I guess.
Profit per visitor, $12 a quarter. Apple store openings by country. U.S. is brown in this graph. It's the big one, but then you see Sweden, Holland,
this isn't
Spain,
total stores.
France.
This is number of openings.
Openings,
right?
New stores.
Per year.
Really amazing.
Don't you love how the analyst has to factor in it might be limited by the fire codes of how many people they can how many retailers have the problem of, unfortunately, fire codes prohibit us from allowing more than four people per square foot this store.
We'd like to make more, but the law prohibits.
They definitely
have more Facebook machines.
I will say I've been to a lot of Apple stores around the world and they're always in the most outrageous places. You know what I mean? You know, the one in New York is just outstanding. Have you guys been to the
Fifth Avenue one?
No, the one in
Soho.
No, the one in the train station.
Grand Central. Yeah,
it looks like it looks like Grand Central is there. The Apple Store. Like, because opened into it, and it just looks like we have all the stuff to look at. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like
there's a grand staircase at either end of Grand Central Station that was intended just to move commuters in and out of the place. But one of them happens to be now the entrance to the entire Apple Store. Now
it's incredible.
It's like the first time I visited, I walked past that staircase three times. I figured, well, no, this can't be the entrance of the store. There must be an elevator or a slide. No, then.
Like a cathedral.
One of the things Google rolled out at Google I.O. was a Google All Access Music Service, a kind of a radio service like we thought Apple would be doing any day now. Apparently, Apple's still aiming for a summer rollout of some sort of iRadio. According to Paul Sloan running in CNET, the issue is with Sony trying to figure out how much Apple would pay for songs that people listen to a tiny bit of and then skip.
I do that a lot.
I do it too.
Skipper's dilemma.
Well, my thing is that I think that Google, I don't know, I'm really a big fan of Spotify. So if I'm going to do something that's more like that, I mean, I think that I don't.
Did you try the Google All Access?
Not yet.
It's very Spotify-like.
I'm going to try.
I love it. And I think it's better than Spotify.
Well, because
I don't want a separate app. I want all my music in one place. So I love the fact that I love the fact that I can sort of borrow an album, you know, for this under subscription, and then after realizing that, well, actually, you've listened to this the full Sweeney Todd Broadway cast recording, Sweeney Todd recording eight times in the past week. Okay, so maybe I shall move that into something I've actually bought.
Yeah,
right.
It's $7.99 if you subscribe before June. Oh, Chris Breen, you're a musician. What is the attitude of musicians towards this kind of stuff?
I think that, I mean, I love streaming services. I have them all.
As a listener.
Except this one.
You're not alone.
I really think it's wonderful. And I think the real advantage of Google coming up with this and Apple, depending on how they handle it, is that people will finally say, oh, this is a legitimate thing. I think a lot of people have not jumped onto something like Spotify or Moog or Artie or Rhapsody because there's sort of that psychological barrier of, oh, I have to, you know, give them my credit card and sign up for this thing. If you're already part of Google's ecosystem or Apple's, where you just click a button and say, oh, yeah, I want this as an option, it's terrific. And then especially if you use Sonos, you do have that that integrated experience where you're not using an app at all. You just have your Sonos app and you just say, yeah, I want to listen to this album. Oh, it's on Spotify. Great. I'll listen there. Or it's on Google Play. I'll listen there when they bring that in there. So I do think that a lot of people are going to jump on this thing more than they did. So I think there has been this attitude of rent my music. No, that's obscene and I won't. Having companies like Google and Apple in there, I think it's going to make a huge difference to this.
I think there was also this kind of feeling like maybe this is illegal. or anyway, the presumption, the kind of continued presumption that they're not paying enough to musicians. That's why I ask you as a musician. Because Spotify doesn't pay very much for plays.
Right, and Pandora's the worst. So
they say they're the best. They say we pay more than half of our revenues to musicians.
Well, that may be, but no. If you look at, they'll graph this out for you. So I think they did a Lady Gaga track or something where they said, "Now this is what we got from a download, a sale, and here's what we got from." is Spotify for the quarter, and it was like $6.31.
Well, I think that the issue is, I think we're very quickly moving towards where the community is the content, you know, and if you don't, if you're not using your content to create community, you're going to be in, I mean, Lady Gaga arguably already does that.
She's
got a huge following. And so the people who are coming to your concerts are paying your bills, not the people buying your album. And I think that as we move to these subscription services, this is going to become more and
more important. According to this article on CNET, one of the reasons music labels like Apple perhaps better than Spotify or maybe Google is that there are other revenue opportunities. Apple will always say, you like this song, you can buy it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they've got iTunes, so they've got the sales built. And Google has that, and I don't know if they do that currently in the All Access, but they could. Apple also has told the music labels that it plans to build out its iAd business, including the potential of adding audio ads into the radio stream.
That would be awesome. Oh, wait.
No.
No, it wouldn't be.
No.
I mean, I guess right now, I mean, there's definitely things I'd love to see in a new service, but unless... You know, a lot of the social searching and, you know, the ability to have individuals really get playlists. I think one of the problems right now is that, I mean, Spotify is fine. You can share your playlists and everything else. But I think that what's missing right now is a financial incentive for people to share playlists where they're actually getting a little bit of something. And that would, if we really got into that, where people could make their own little business. And when I say little business, I mean, like, make an extra $200 a month or something like that on the fact that they've built up this huge following and you create, I think this moving to finding ways to socially share and generate new, you know, interest in music is something I think is missing from all of these. And I don't see anyone doing it, but I think that is the only thing missing. Cause for me right now, Spotify completely killed my interest in buying.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the two like media crushing apps in my opinion is Flipboard and Spotify. Because when I got Flipboard, I stopped reading magazines. And when I got Spotify, I stopped buying music.
I think Pandora did that for me. Pandora
didn't do it for me because I kept on stopping me from skipping. And I was like,
yeah, you can only skip six
times. As soon as I could get Spotify and download like tons and tons of music.
Listen to whatever you want.
And listen to whatever I want, when I want, how I want. I was like, I'm done. Yeah. I don't
need Songza on Sonos is fantastic too.
Love Songza. I also have that. And Songza has all these curated streams. Pandora repeats a lot. I have, you know, if when I listen to Fleetwood Mac Station, I'm going to get the same five songs in the first half hour. Every single time.
Yeah. I use Pandora for discovery, but I kind of stopped using it because most of what I like to use music for is really to have control over my playlists. And that's the reason why I do, you know, I do have a Spotify account. The reason why I don't really use it that much for like regular playlists is that I like the fact that at some point I own this song. It is an unlocked DRM file that I can do whatever I want with on whatever app I want with from now until 2 days before Armageddon. And I don't like the idea that I won't have access to this really carefully curated playlist that I've been spending years putting together unless I keep coming up with that monthly fee.
Yeah, although that, I have to say, that is my number one listen to Spotify playlist is Andy Inoko's one song. Which you put on Google Plus like 2 years ago. I don't remember when you did that, but you said if you could only have one song that you would listen to, and there's hundreds of songs in it, it's great. It's a Spotify playlist.
Yeah.
So thank you.
I should do that again. That's always useful. Awesome. It does show you like how scary different it is to be marketing music these days. Because I love the fact that I have lots of Twitter followers means that if once a year, every couple of years, I say recommend one song and one song only. You can't say this album or here are three. You have to put all of your marbles onto one song. I get some of my favorite songs in my favorite playlists are things where people just had to say, I will give you only one and this is it.
And the
ability to sample it for 30 seconds to see what it's all about, or go on Spotify or on Google Play and listen to the entire damn thing and know that, yes, I know why this person liked this song. It is awesome.
Well, and it, the other thing, you should do it every year because every it changes. You know, my one song would not be the same this year that it was last year. It was the one song I really liked last year.
I will definitely do that tomorrow at around 1 p.m. Good. I'm going to put out that call.
All right, I'll be watching, and you'll put it on Spotify as a playlist.
Because
it was like you could groups you could crowdsource a playlist, right?
I like to curate it a little bit. Not a big bit, but just they're somewhere. Again, if it's a Wild Man Fisher song, yeah, maybe we'll people don't want to encounter that.
Oh, come on.
I'm a Christmas tree.
Come on.
I'm a Christmas tree.
No. Merry-go-round is awesome. Put that on the list, please.
Well, okay. So if I was thinking of Rush's Tom Sawyer, would you let me put that one on?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course.
Checking.
Come on. Rush. I was just listening to Rush. I was just listening to it. It came on the radio or something like that.
It's a great. It's one of those songs.
Oh, I haven't listened to the song
exactly,
in so long.
It comes up on the radio
it's
and you
awesome.
Go, yeah. Our show today, actually, Tim Cook auction ended, $610,000. Just thought you'd like to know. Some quickies here.
Do you want me to ask him anything for you, Leo?
Did you buy that?
Yeah.
Good man.
On the corporate. He outbid me by 10 grand. I was very upset.
It really should have been a journalist, right? Because what a great chance to get a great exclusive interview.
That coffee would have been really
sit there
short then.
And smile. And
yeah, I know. CEOs are the worst. The worst. U.S. Air Force expects to save $50 million by buying 18,000 iPads.
Well played. Well played.
It's called government math, my friend.
Excellent. This is why they're asking Apple for more money.
One pilot says it was an iPhone that almost brought down the plane that killed the navigation. And it was a regional airliner.
Yeah, I got something in my nose.
Climbing 9,000 feet. Well, you don't want to be the guy. The
Nobody's
compasses
turning
went
their
haywire.
Phone off. No one's turned their
until
phone off.
A flight attendant persuaded a passenger in BS. Row 9
such BS
to switch off the iPhone. The pilot told the NASA Aviation Safety Reporting System the timing of the cell phone being turned off coincided exactly with the moment where our compasses started working again.
Yeah. This pilot's over 70 years old, senile, and probably can't remember what was actually
was
going on in the first
casing
place.
On the iPhone.
I've heard about these things, these cell phones. You know, they're going to bring the plane down.
They got iPads in the cockpit. I don't know.
Yeah. No one turns their phone off. Here's the problem is that
30% admit that we don't turn our phones off.
I don't even think about it. I mean, it's like the only people that turn the phone off is the people.
But
who
you don't want to be the guy responsible for bringing the plane down.
I'm not going to feel that way. I've already decided if I fly enough, I have to think about it. When you have
no, you do. When you fly a lot,
if the plane's going down,
yeah.
I've decided that I'm going to put my hands up and go, woohoo! Yeah. And
all the way down.
If you're going to die, you might as well enjoy it all the way to the ground. I mean, you know.
I was saying this to a pilot on my way home, and he didn't turn his phone off, so.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
No.
But Alex brings up a good, it's sort of like a value proposition. Like, if you turn the phone off, like when you're asked to, that means that there's maybe less chance of causing the plane to crash. However, if you leave the phone on and it does cause the plane to crash, you won't have to wait for the phone to boot up to send that last SMS to your family.
Exactly. So now that is some thinking.
And they'll never trace it to you. They will never say it was this guy's phone that did it.
Oh, sure they will.
No, they do. They go through the records and they would find out whose phone is on.
And iMessage was sent to your
life. No, but the problem is they're going to find out whose phone is on. It's going to be 100 people on the plane. Like, the only
if they could figure out that Denzel Washington drank 3 vodkas in flight, they could figure out whose iPhone that was.
It was Alec Baldwin. They know.
No, because they walk through trying to figure it out. The funny thing is that
you're going to have little detectors.
The only person, there's like we call it the penalty box, which is that if you get caught using your phone when they're taking off, right before, like when they're taxiing around,
yeah.
Then the stewardess will sit there and the flight attendant will sit there and make you, they'll watch you turn it off.
Right.
But outside of that, everyone's off. You know, so the key is, it's like this thing, and we're, you know, anyway.
I got Johnny Jett, our travel guru, yelled at me. Because I said, I put it in airplane mode and I put it in standby. I don't press and hold, hey, slide to turn off.
I'm texting all the way to 10,000 feet.
Oh, you're going to bring the plane
down. You know, it's funny, though. So on the last flight from L.A., the pilot's doing his thing, man. And talking about Wi-Fi. And he's like, as soon as we take off, I can't remember his name. I apologize if you're listening. Because I could have sworn that he'd said MacBreak.
Oh,
like
sure.
You can get in your Wi-Fi and download
a lot of pilots listen.
And And when I got off, it was from Southwest.
And they're going crazy right now, by the way.
And he said, did you hear my MacBreak mentioned? You know, and so
he said MacBreak on the
Southwest. Yeah.
Oh, this is Southwest.
So when we get to 10,000 feet, you can
listen to MacBreak weekly.
Yeah.
With Alex Lindsay, the guy in row 9.
But it went by so fast, I wasn't sure if anyone had really said anything, and it turned out.
Alex. Alex, we've also determined that you're someone who does not listen to the instructions over.
See, now he will. I'm never going to get that. I really should not have said that on the show.
This is your pilot speaking, I do turn off the phone
more often than not, only because I think that on principle it's a good idea to do what the flight attendants tell you to.
Yes.
Because there was this PBS special on airline crashes that just stuck with me, because I must have seen it when I was 16, 17, 18. And it's basically, if you just listen to what the flight attendants sort of categorize you when you're bored as the person who listens and does what you tell them to do, and the person who's just going to cause problems. And, you know, not that they're going to, like, say, okay, people who listen to us, go to the door that I tell you to.
You first on the slide.
go to the ones with the fire on it. Yeah. So.
Well,
I just don't want to get scolded. That's all.
I do admit that when spending a lot of time in airports, you do watch people argue, like, and yell, and you really have to understand is, like, every person that you talk to, from the person that you're picking your ticket up to TSA, to the flight attendant, they have an enormous number of subjective decisions to make. You know, subjective, as in they can make the call.
Right.
You know, on the ground.
They can hurt you.
And you messing with them is not going to improve your experience of your trip. So, you know,
They're good universal rules. One of them is to smile to people in the service industry. If for no other reason than for every person who smiles at them, there are probably three people who gave them a hard time for no adequately explained reason.
Yep.
And they could use someone smiling at them.
Yes.
A result in the first class upgrade yet, but I'm still hoping.
Leo, before you switch with your 9 to 5 Mac, Mark Gurman's usually got good sources, Flickr and Vimeo integration in iOS 7, he's saying.
Ooh, okay, let me think about that. Flickr and Vimeo. Now, YouTube is already integrated where you press a button and it uploads to YouTube. That kind of integration?
Yeah, this would be ShareSheet, the same way that Twitter and Facebook is.
ShareSheet. Good. I like it. We're going to let Alex Lindsay go. Do you want to quickly do a pick before you run?
LastPass.
Okay, thank
you. So, like I say, if you haven't used it...
You're crazy if you haven't used it.
Doug Dalton made me try it, and I complained about it because I was like, oh, I can't keep on forgetting my password and everything. But now that I got it working,
in the world.
And we share them. You can share like codes with everybody, so I can log in and grab all the codes for all of our elementals and everything else. It's great. LastPass.
LastPass. Buck a month or free if you're cheap. I put my mom on it.
The whole company's on it.
She had a file on her desktop she came to visit last month. It said passwords.doc. So I said, Mom, we're going to work on this. And then I thought I had a scare because she called me from the airport saying my laptop and my iPad were stolen on the security belt. And I freaked because I had not removed. I had set her up on LastPass, but I had yet to remove passwords.doc. And I thought, did I give her a login? And I immediately changed all our passwords, and then I realized, oh, it's in my trunk. It fell out of the suitcase.
Yeah, the only thing you have to be careful with LastPass is making sure that you turn it off so it's on auto.
Oh, yeah. Never put your password into it. Just have a good password that you can remember.
You remember one.
But that's hard to guess.
Exactly.
Which I have.
Yes. Okay. Bye-bye, guys.
Good. Thank you, Alex Lindsay from PixelCore.com. We're going to take a break. Come back with the rest of you guys' picks in a moment. Our show today brought to you by the good folks at Shutterstock. I did a blog post, first time in almost a year. Yesterday, to promote the fact that we were going to do our live coverage of the Xbox thing, and I thought, oh, I forgot I got my Shutterstock account, and I got a nice little image of an Xbox controller drawn. It's actually pretty nice. If you go to leoville.com/blogs, I don't know, I'll have to go there and see. It's in the news section, so it doesn't show up on the front, but it's really cute, and I reminded me how great Shutterstock is. If you need images, if you're a blogger. Every post, I know this, every post has to have an image. If you have a publication, boy, I just tell you, it is a really great source. 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, video clips, all royalty-free, all very affordable. And they have a great search engine, which I have to say I'm really fond of, which lets you search for anything. So I searched for Happy Xbox. And I got the little controller. I love that. You can search by not just subject, but by color, by emotion,
by all sorts of stuff. In fact, the emotion, the color is a spectrum tool that lets you kind of, for if you're a designer, put together all of the collateral that you want in a certain style. You could save it into your light box. And by the way, it's free to create an account and to have a light box and share the light box with other members of your team to collect ideas. So I've been doing that for a while on my Shutterstock account. I collect all of the different images that I want into a light box or think I might want to use into a light box, so I have quick access to them. Shutterstock is a great deal with great images. They have a variety of ways to pay. You can get individual image packs. But what I did is a monthly subscription. My 25 images a day is probably overkill, but 25 images a day subscription. And it's you can get 30% off any of those packages right now if you visit Shutterstock.com and use our offer code MacBreak and the number 5. Again, it's free to sign up. All you look, what did you look for? Bunnies?
This is animals and wildlife.
Oh. So you see there, there's photos, there's vector art. There's just, it's because you got 20 million things, it's the variety is astounding. It's fabulous. Try it. Shutterstock.com. Free to sign up, free to make a light box and play with the spectrum and the search tool. Actually, I should update this. It's now 25 million stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and videos. Shutterstock.com. They add 10,000 images a day, so there's always going to be something new. Look at that gorilla. I like that. I'm going to use that on my next blog post. It's actually, you know, I've been trying to think of ways to kind of stimulate creativity to get me to post more. And that's, I make a light box with images like that gorilla saying, now write a post about it that this would be applied to. And it really is fun that way.
Yeah, it really, it
gets you going.
Yeah, and because there's so many images, whatever your creative mind is thinking of, you just find it.
Something there. MacBreak 5 is our offer code for 30% off when you do decide to buy. It's time now for, ladies and gentlemen, our picks of the week. We heard from Alex Lindsay because he had to rush off, but let's get over to Chris Breen. And besides Wildman Fisher, what's turning you on these days?
Well, besides Wildman Fisher,
yeah.
I have a device that you could listen to Wildman Fisher too, in all its digital glory. So you get every nuance of Larry's spectacular vocals. And it's called The Dragonfly. This is a $250 USB digital audio converter. It's USB, so comes on, a little cap comes off there.
It's tiny,
and the glorious thing about it is that in your laptop, whether you have a computer, whether you have a Windows PC or a Mac, the sound circuitry in there is kind of not so great. And so if you're an audiophile kind of person, and you're the sort of person that would purchase a digital audio converter box to put next to your computer, you don't have to anymore. You can get this USB stick. It supports 44.1, 48, 88.2 kilohertz, and 96 kilohertz. Mm. It makes sure that the audio data is transferred perfectly. And you just simply plug it into your computer. You plug in a 3.5 millimeter plug in there. And you can use it with headphones. It also has a variable output. So if you want, you can plug it into powered speakers. You could plug it into an input on your very expensive receiver or amplifier. And it really does improve the sound of your music coming out of your computer in glorious ways. And not simply that you have to use FLAC files or Ogg Vorbis files, but it improves the sound of MP3 files, AAC files, certainly AIFF and WAV files. It is expensive at $250, but if you really care about the music coming out of your computer, it's a wonderful device.
You know, I have, because I have that setup where you have the my MacBook Retina and the 27-inch display, and you keep the Retina closed. And I didn't want to I wanted the sound to come out of the USB port because I didn't want to have to take sound out of the laptop. So I got a DAC, but it wasn't one of these. It was from FIIO. But there is a difference in the quality. I mean, you might say $250, but the quality of the chips used, the DSP chips in these, it varies widely. And you're a musician, so I trust you if you say the Dragonfly is the best. That's the one.
It's a good thing to have.
Yeah. Thank you for the recommendation. Mr. Rene Ritchie.
We kind of teased it already, but my pick is the new Google Hangouts app. It's a bit confusingly named because Google Hangouts are part of Google Plus, but the Hangouts is a new, distinct, separate app for iOS. It launched last week right after Google I/O's keynote, and it's basically what we said earlier. It's a way to combine a lot of different Google communication tools in one. So you can text message And you can do text messages in it, group messages, video calls. You can do Hangouts. One of the things I like best about iMessage is that I can do it on my Mac and on my iOS device. And with the Google Hangouts app, when you do text into there, if you have Jabber set up in Messages or another client on your Mac, you can do conversations on both at the same time there too, which for me is a big productivity boom. And I've tried it out with numerous people. The video quality is great. It's fast. It seems to keep everything in nice chronological order, which can't always be said about every text-based app. And it looks, the design, I mean, Google's been raising their design game on iOS for a while, and arguably iOS apps look Google apps on iOS look better than the Android versions these days, and that's not always true, but the Google Hangout app is gorgeous. There's still a few bugs because it's brand new. Like, it let me try to call myself and then said I wouldn't take any calls from me. I was not available for myself.
Well, why did you try to call yourself?
It was accidental. So when you start it up, there's these big pictures at the top, and some of them are online and some are not. And it's kind of confusing as to why they specify those people as featured contacts, even when they're not online. And the search is not great. I was searching for somebody, like I was searching for Marcus, and it showed me 100 Marcuses, even though they weren't the ones I talked with the most. So I accidentally hit my own name as part of the Hangout setup, and it tried to call me.
Right.
But that's a small growing pain. And Google will fix that. Yeah, I'll fix that quickly. But it's a phenomenal app, and hopefully it's the beginning of a big arms race in terms of cross-platform communications amongst all the major players.
I agree with you. It's only good for us to have the choices.
Yeah.
And I, of course, immediately installed it.
I absolutely love it too. I mean, it's like what frustrates me about messaging is that I really kind of have to have one app for SMS, one app for IP level chat, another app that works best for video, and then an app like Path, which is for, I don't even necessarily care if the person I'm sending this message to is available right now to see it. I just want at some point them to see this really cool picture. And man, it's one app that does absolutely everything. If I get my entire circle of friends to switch to Hangouts as their usual, group, hey, I'm going to be 10 minutes late, but I'm circling the parking lot over an appetizer without me app, it would be this one.
I'm adding you right now. It's funny because nobody I know will use it with me.
I'll use it with you, Leo.
All right, I'm going to add all use guys.
I'll use it.
I already circled you, Andy, so I don't have to add you.
There you go.
And I could put Renee in here. What I'll do is I'll start a Hangout with the three of us, and then that way it could be an odd Chad too, right?
Absolutely. I'm using it all the time.
Are you?
Yeah, and because GTalk was my preferred messenger, and it still has limited XMPP support, so you can still use it with Trillion, and Renee was saying, that it will plug in with normal clients.
And I think Google's going to add more and more capabilities. And we're going to see SMS.
We use the Hangouts thing all the time. We use it for scrums for our tech team. We use it for editorial meetings. We use it. I'm on a Hangout 4 or 5 times a day, and they work really well.
I think I haven't circled you. I can't believe it, Renee. I apologize. I'm going to add you to my circles. Right now.
Until the Twitter Hangouts come out, this is going to be the best thing going.
Twitter Hangouts? No. All right, I'm adding you right now.
160 words, 160 spoken words, Leo.
Yeah, right. Andy and Akko, your pick of the week.
Much like Renee, my pick was something we discussed today, which was the revitalized Flickr. Again, I recommend it to people all the time, and I'm glad that it actually looks like it was made in the 2000s instead of 1998. So instead, I'm going to recommend Stephen Sondheim's Finishing the Hat, which is not an ebook, but I didn't want to run upstairs to the TV room to grab the book. I don't know why, but I'm sort of on a Sondheim jag for the past 2 or 3 weeks, just like listening to every single one of his shows kind of in order. And yesterday I finally got to Sweeney Todd, just listening to it from start to finish, unfortunately in a public place. And because the lead role is a baritone, I don't want to, when you get to the point where Sweeney is serenading his razors about how many people you're going to kill, you don't want to be in the middle of a coffee shop and distractedly start singing along with it. That way you will definitely get a circle of emptiness around you. Anyway, it's such a great book, even if you're not like really terribly a fan of Sondheim or musical theater, because this is like a creative person who's spent like 30 years writing and doing wonderful works, doing nothing
Sondheim?
But writing about the experience of writing each and every show and talking about each and every decision he made in here. The show company has a patter song in the middle of it. I'm not getting married today. That's just like a total tongue twister for this poor actress to have to this singer to sing. But he breaks it down and says, here are the lyrics to it. And if you notice, here's how I constructed this to make it singable. You can't, if you just put random words in there, it's impossible to do. But if you actually balance out the syllables, you can actually do it in small chunks. And also you'll notice that she's, in this song, she's really kind of losing her mind. So that's why there's disconnected thoughts and none of her lines rhyme while she's doing the patter bit of it, because I didn't want her to have the sort of it's. And you're like, wow, I knew you had to think when you're writing songs, but I didn't. That's cool. He really thought about all of this. And it's not like it's, but that's exactly what it is, going through this book and saying, wow. And every chapter sort of prefaced with a few pages about, here is where I was in my career at this point. Here is how I learned how to do this. And here's why I chose to write the lyrics for Gypsy, but not the music. And oh man, such a great stuff.
Attend the tale of Sweeney Todd. His face was pale and his eye was odd. He shaved the faces of gentlemen who were never thereafter were heard of again. He trod path. Oh, Sweeney Todd.
Have a little priest. Have a little priest.
I love that one, too. It is the best soundtrack.
Only problem is we only get it on Sundays.
It was my dream. I saw Len Carreyrou do it on Broadway, and it was my dream. He was very good. It's my dream someday to play Sweeney Todd in some community theater production.
I was just thinking that yesterday. I either want to be Sweeney or the judge, because
you can be the judge.
I can't do. I got the mutton chops for the judge.
You do. You're perfect.
Pretty woman, pretty women.
Sweeney Todd doesn't have to be able to sing. That's the other part of it. He's you're tender. It's good. I can do it.
You can Rex Harrison your way right through it.
Exactly. I love Sondheim too. I'm going to check out that book. That sounds great.
Terrific book.
And we'll be doing the Petaluma Players version of Sweeney Todd sometime in the fall. So make sure stay tuned.
Anyone who knows sets and costumes and can run a light board.
We can do it right here.
We'll have the VFW hall from 7:30 until 9:30. Yeah. So we'll be running.
Swing your razor high, Sweeney.
And if somebody has a barber chair we can borrow, I promise to hose it down.
And a strop.
Once more with feeling.
Hey, great. Chad has an uncle who used to work in the barber industry.
You got any straight razors? This is a game that I credit Sarah Lane with addicting me to, and I'm sad she did. It is the hottest game right now, I think, on the iPhone. You could play it on the iPad. Actually, it works pretty well on the iPad, but it is an iPhone-only game. Say it with me, dots. Never before has a game so simple been so fully addictive. The idea is you connect the dots. It's nice if you can make a square, you get a little extra on that. You get 60 seconds to connect all the dots in an array. This is the training. I'm just showing you the tutorial. And as Charles Eames once said, eventually everything connects. It's really kind of bejeweled without all the cruft. And it's really addictive and really fun. And I'm working hard because Jeff Needles, our intern, is really good at it. And I'm trying to get as good as Jeff is. I don't know how you get the things to coerce into squares. That's what I really want to know. So the longer you connect, the better. But a square is extra points. You guys play this yet? Don't.
I'm staying away from it, Leo.
Stay well away from it. If there was anything that could get me out of The Simpsons Tapped Out, it would be this. And it's 60 seconds a shot. That's it. I mean, it's very straightforward. And so as a result, you know, it's what's your top score, Jeff? Is he around? What's your top score? He's like really good at this. 500? As you can see, I've got 57.
Josh has 540.
Josh? Josh has 540?
Yeah, he's the number one in the brick house, I think, right now.
Number one in the brick house. Wow. Well, I can tell what you guys are working hard on. All right, so we got to beat Josh and Needles. I got a dog dot trophy. You get trophy. It is, you know what? It's in very much in the Lauren Brichter style of gaming. It's very clean, it's very delightful. Simple. Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah.
There's something so nice about it, the typography. It's so
perfect
clean.
For mobile.
It is a really nice little mobile game, and yeah, highly addictive. If I join up with Facebook, we'll see what the other guys' scores are. I have it on my iPhone and my iPad Mini. I haven't played it on this one yet. That's why we have a fresh start here. Dots, and we're going to start a Dots League. That's right. I don't think there's a lot of music on it. Actually, I can't remember. Is it very musical? I don't think so. No. No, it's really it's not about the music. Yeah, it's about the dots. We'll it's about the experience. All right. It's like that. That's all. Although that could get kind of addictive too, couldn't it?
It's like the Merlin game almost.
The Merwin game?
Merlin.
Oh, Merlin. Yeah.
Leaps and bloops.
R2-D2 only communicated in beeps and bloops, and people think he's adorable.
He's actually, adorable, now that I've got the music going, I think I'm going to be better. I never knew there was music. This is good. I like it. All right.
And 2 years later, that's why the alien invasion was such a success.
Come by back setting next us Tuesday. This
technology Call me that Ender.
Turns off our higher brain functions.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on Mac Break Weekly. Thank you to Chris Breen. The hair of Breen lives on Twitter, as does the body of Breen, but only one's official.
As does the body of Breen.
Yeah. The official is the body of Breen.
That's correct.
And you can read his Mac 911 column, macworld.com, and a lot of his other writings. He is the Mac Daddy. And we love him. We love him.
Okay, thanks, Leo.
Thank you. Thank you also to Renee Ritchie of iMore.com for joining us this week. Good to have you.
Thank you, Leo. Pleasure as always.
See you at WWDC.
Absolutely.
Andy Anatko, Chicago Sun-Times. You're staying at home for the WWDC. Are you coming out here?
I don't know yet. I might come in just for a barnstorming little trip. I'm not going to buy my plane ticket until I know how many nights I can stay. But
we'll talk to the bursar.
I definitely want to come in.
Talk to the bursar and see if we can cut you a check.
Okay, it's always nice. But
yeah, no, we get some benefit out of it. Yeah,
I don't want you to think my going is conditional upon. Even if I came in on my own petard, I'd certainly want to be there for if Renee's. If we can do like our first like all meatware edition,
ooh,
where everybody is actually around the table at once,
that would be
on
worth
Tuesday,
it. That's worth
that
it.
Would be pretty awesome.
That's worth the cost of Virgin Atlantic Economy
Amtrak.
Plus Amtrak.
I'll do coach for 81 hours.
Actually, I hear they have coast to coast petards now, so you're set.
And we've got set. Party invite with your name on it, Andy, as long as you're there.
For an extra $10, you'll be in Petard Plus.
All petard rides are nonstop, so that's one of the upsides, and I mean upside. Thank you, Andy, Renee, Chris, Alex, Lindsay, in absentia. We thank you for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly. Normally, we're a little late today because of the Xbox announcement. Normally, we do it 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1800 UTC on Tuesdays on twit.tv. Watch live. We love it if you do. But we do make on-demand audio and versions and video versions available after the fact at twit.tv/MBW. And wherever finer podcasts are aggregated, stored, and delivered to your portable player. Thank you for joining us, but you better get back to work because you know what? Break time is over. This is much longer than the federally mandated break time.